declare the meeting open at 9:32 and start by acknowledging the Quandamooka people who are the traditional custodians of the land in which we meet. I'd also like to pay respect to their elders past and present and extend that respect to other Indigenous Australians who may be with us this morning. Just a quick rundown for public conduct at our meeting, which is covered under section 32 of our standing orders for all members of the public present at a meeting, but they must not without prior approval of the chairperson make any audio or video recording or take any photographs, remain quiet and not disrupt the meeting in any way, not bring into the meeting any signs, placards or items that may cause a hazard or interfere with other persons present, be suitably dressed and turn all mobile devices to silent mode. And would ask that you leave the meeting if you were required to take any calls. As chairperson, it is my responsibility to warn a member of the public present at a meeting who is not complying with any of these requirements that I may, with or without such notice, require that person to leave the meeting and not return for a period as the chairperson decides, and that could include future meetings. I haven't been advised of any leaves of absence, but I'd now like to ask our Redlands Ministers Fellowship Pastor Brendan Devine from Victoria Point Baptist Church to lead counsel in a brief devotional segment. Over to you, Pastor.
I believe that's on. Excellent. Good morning. It's a real honour to sit here and be with you and speak. It's quite a privilege, so I thank you all for having me. I have a bit of a problem personally with my memory. I tend to think I'm absolutely certain of things that my wife has now convinced me are completely incorrect. But often I am doubling down in arguments, much to my own detriment, just to be sure that, you know, I'm definitely right. I'm positive I'm right. And the argument might go for 5 minutes, 50 minutes, and might end up in 3 days of frosty silence for me to discover that, no, I was definitely wrong and it wasn't worth standing on that. It's my problem often is pride. It's like this insipid little thing that creeps into me, and it affects my relationship with her. It affects my relationship with other people, and I think it's something that is inside all of us. Is this little sin called pride that is deceptive, because it's hard to tell. You often don't realize it's there. It's other people that can see it in you. I know that from scriptures tell us that the pride puffs up. This idea that pride builds us up, but often you find that pride is actually something that diminishes you. It promises a lot of things. It promises that you'll be bigger, that you'll be better, that you'll perform more. Other people will respect you because you're someone who is proud. We use it as an antidote to fear, to insecurity. I've watched it in young people, deep insecurity for various reasons, and they're told that the antidote to their insecurity is to be proud. Be pride, build up. But unfortunately, pride seems to diminish us. It makes us less. It prevents us from saying what we know we need to say. It prevents us from doing what we know we ought to do. And it prevents us, most of all, from hearing what we know we should hear from others. Because pride tells us that we have everything that we need, and in fact, it leads to our ruin. Proverbs tells us that pride leads to destruction, and a proud attitude brings ruin. And so true. You know, we see other people in pride, and we think the way to combat that pride is, or that aggressiveness, is with pride of our own. And as a result, the relationship's ruined, the situation's ruined, and we walk out with far less than we would have had if we had a different attitude. Philippians, Paul the Apostle tells us that the antidote to pride is humility, but it's incredibly difficult. He writes this, he says, "Be humble and give more honour to others than to yourselves." That's a very difficult thing to do, particularly when you've got a point to make, or when you've got something to discover, or you've got something to stand on. The idea of giving honour to someone other than yourself seems counterintuitive. It makes you think you're going to get less out of that situation, that pride would have got you more, but humility is going to leave you left behind. But the way that Paul describes it in Philippians is he uses the example of Jesus Christ. He writes in Philippians chapter 2, he says, "Make your own attitude that of Christ Jesus, who existing in the form of God did not consider equality with God as something to be used for his own advantage. Instead, he emptied himself by assuming the form of a slave, taking on the likeness of men. And when he had come as a man in his external form, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even to a cross. For this reason, God highly exalted him and gave him a name that is above every other name, so that the name of Jesus every knee will bow, of those who are in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue would confess that Jesus Christ is Lord." As much as the instincts in me tell me that pride is the way to get what I want, you know, the word tells me that actually humility is the way to get the greatest honor, the greatest exaltation, that it's through serving those around me, honoring those around me, even when it doesn't make sense, even when every part of me just wants to tear their face off. That in truth, humility is what's going to bring greater honor. It's going to bring greater results, not just for me, but for everyone around me. So I just trust this morning that the gospel, the humility of Jesus might infuse your meeting, infuse your hearts as you say what you need to say and try to express what needs to be expressed, that the attitude of humility would cultivate a really promising experience here and a win-win for everybody. Thank you for having me. I'm just going to pray now, if that's all right. Heavenly Father, Lord, I want to ask that you would be present in this meeting. Lord, that as things are said, as decisions are made, as thoughts are processed and wrestled through, and often seems like there's not a clear way forward, I ask that you would give wisdom and discernment. But most of all, Lord, you would break down our pride that there might be humility. Lord, that you might give us an increase in that antidote, that you might enable us to put aside our egos, Lord, put aside our own agendas to serve and listen to those around us. Lord, I ask that by your Spirit you would make us more like Jesus this morning. In your name, amen.
Thank you, councillors. The next item on our agenda is recognition of achievement. If I might just start by firstly congratulating Councillor Hewlett on his election of Deputy Mayor. I was absent at the last meeting, so I just wanted to publicly acknowledge and congratulate Councillor Hewlett, and also acknowledge Councillor Boglari, who served us 2 years as Deputy Mayor. So I appreciate the partnership that we were able to establish and look forward to building on that with Councillor Hewlett as Deputy Mayor. I'd also acknowledge, I believe, Councillor Boglari probably just got her 10-year pin as well. Well, not yet. So that's 10 years serving the community. So get in line behind Councillor Elliott and see if you can achieve grandfather status here in council. All right, moving on. In more seriousness now, if I may, just wanted to reflect on a very special member of our community that left our planet last week, on the weekend. It's a vow to Auntie Margaret Islam. In the early hours of Saturday morning, Auntie Margaret passed away peacefully on her beloved island home of Manjerribah. She became fondly known to so many of us within council and touched many lives. We know her as Auntie Marg, and she was certainly the second wheel of a formidable partnership with her husband, Uncle Patrick Islam, who passed away a couple of years ago. I read the following short tribute prepared by Christine Moyle, daughter of Auntie Marg and senior advisor here at Council, Di Andrews. Naglia Bujang, which means our mother. Margaret Cecilia Islin was born in 1930. She was to celebrate her 89th birthday later this year. We honour a lifetime of accomplishment by a dedicated wife, mother, grandmother, great-grandmother and community worker. In her role as chairperson of the Manjerribah Magumpin Elders and Council, she was instrumental in bringing about change, opening the eyes and hearts of people from all walks of life about the depth of living and historical Aboriginal knowledge and culture existing in our community. She always worked in the spirit of reconciliation. In 1998, she participated in negotiations to bring about the first agreement between Australian local government, between us and Australian local government authority and native title claimant, namely the Redland Shire Council and the Quandamooka Land Council Aboriginal Corporation. The opening of Tarabulla La Maya in 2006 on the site of the Myora Mission was a culmination of a dream for Auntie Margaret and the elders. That project was undertaken in strong collaboration with the Redland City Council and with the ongoing support of local companies, recognising the significance of the mission and its history of the area. Her tireless community service saw her receive many accolades, including the recipient of a Tourism Award for her cultural and heritage talks in 1998 and a Commonwealth Medal as part of the Centenary of Federation celebrations in 2000. In 2001, she was named as the inaugural Grandview Living Treasure and received a Citizenship Award at the Australian Day ceremonies in 2002. At the same ceremony, the MIMIC, Manjeera Magumpan Elders and Council, received an Encouragement Award for Sovereign Day. She co-authored a book for use in schools called Manjeriba, an Indigenous story of North Stradbroke Island, and she also produced a book on plants and bush tucker in partnership with Lynn Shipway, Queensland Herbarium and Sibelco Australia Limited. A collective effort by members of the Manjeriba Magumpan Elders and Council, after 5 years in the making, she saw the Jandai Language Dictionary and Interactive CD published in 2011. The dictionary and the Bush Tucker booklet can be purchased at our Indigiscapes. In 2016, due to ill health, she retired from the day-to-day duties of MIMIC, but continued to keep in contact with the people at the various community events. For those who were lucky enough to know her, her legacy will be enshrined in our hearts and in our minds. She was fearless and fearsome. She was passionate while being compassionate. She was dedicated and driven, and she was certainly an outstanding champion for her people. So on behalf of all of us here in the community and council, I would like to extend our thoughts and prayers to Christine, Patsy, Brian, Mary and Wendy and their extended families. With that, she was a very special lady in our community for many, many years, so I'd ask that we all stand and give a minute's silence for Annie Mark. Thank you. I haven't been advised of any other recognition of achievement this morning, so we'll move on to the receipt and confirmation of minutes for the 18th of April. If I may have a mover and seconder that the minutes of general meeting held on the 18th of April be confirmed. Move Councillor Mitchell. No items of correctness, councillors. So I get a seconder. Seconder Councillor Hughes. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. And the next item, councillors, is matters outstanding from minutes of a previous general meeting. I haven't been advised of any, so we'll move straight on to public participation. And I'll need a motion, councillors, that we adjourn the meeting for a 15-minute public participation segment to allow members of the public to address council on matters of public interest related to local government. Move Councillor Boglari, seconded Councillor Edwards. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Just before I invite the first speaker, we've been advised of three speakers this morning, councillors. I just advise those speakers that you may see some signage around our chambers that, I guess, directs us how we manage public participation at our meetings. It's Council's usual practice to require any person wishing to address the meeting to state their name and suburb or organisation that they represent and the subject they wish to speak about. Information will be recorded in the minutes of the meeting, which is a public document available for inspection at Council's administration building and published on Council's website. I'd also like to advise you that the meeting is being recorded in audio video, and that by speaking you acknowledge and agree that this video or recording will be placed in the public domain. Any person addressing council will state their name and suburb or the organisation they represent and the subject they wish to speak about. We ask them to stand and act and speak with decorum. Be respectful and courteous. You need to make sure no comments directed at any individual council employee, councillor or member of the public, ensuring that all comments relate to council as a whole. As chairperson, it is my responsibility to consider each application on its merits and consider any relevant matter in making my decision to allow or disallow a person to address the local government. It's also my responsibility to give priority to members of the public who have made a written application to the CEO to address the meeting and determine the maximum number of speakers based on the number of persons wanting to speak and the time available. Each speaker has a maximum of 5 minutes dependent on the number of speakers, and I also have the responsibility to withdraw the approval to address council before that time period has elapsed. Just a quick reminder that debate and or discussion cannot be entered into at this time. If there are any speakers that have some hearing impaired and would like to stay in the chamber, in the public gallery, they will bring the microphone to you. We'll ask you to stand. We have a hearing loop in the back of the room. So I first invite Ms. Zorinka Johnston from Cleveland to come up to the microphone. Ms. Johnston, if you just state your name and suburb or the organisation you represent, and you may begin when you're ready. Thank you.
Can you distribute these, please? Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'm Zorinka Johnston from Raby Bay, and I'm here today to talk about four unexploded ordinances and the need for a new Raby Bay Canal Works policy and program. I'm now circulating my speech, and there are copies for all councillors and the CEO and the minute taker. There are four impending explosions I see in Council's current Raby Bay Works program. One, the first one, is unacknowledged statutory obligations. Council has not acknowledged its statutory obligations under the Coastal Protection and Management Act to maintain navigability in Raby Bay canals. There are three applicable Act sections. 116, which says the canal must be surrendered to the state as a public waterway. Section 121, a local government must maintain and keep clean each canal in its area. And section 124, which is an obligation to keep particular structures in safe conditions. A person who is owner of freehold land, if the land is above the high water mark, and receives the benefit of the structure, has an obligation to maintain the particular structure, and anyone else, including a local government acting as a trustee. I read these provisions to mean that local government and benefiting landowners both have obligations, but the landowner's responsibility is limited to above high water mark structures, and I've got the extracts from the Act here if anyone wants to read them. Second, impending unexploded ordinance is violating levy regulations. Council is flagrantly violating levy regulations by switching never-ending canal works timelines into annual works programs with annual end dates every year, but still without a proper plan, still without proper budgeting, and still without a proper end date for the whole program of works. Council has simply converted long-term program management into annual projections. This violates the spirit of the regulation, if not the letter of the law, which requires a real end date for the levy. It's all about the levy. The third one is, I've called, RABE Rexiting, a consultation gone wrong. Council must now explain its wacky, expensive, over $350,000, I don't know exactly how much, community consultation it's recently had on Raby Bay canals and other waterfronts, or find a plausible apologetic conclusion on this misconceived chat with all ratepayers, which is what it said publicly, and which had no public terms of reference. Privately, it appeared to everyone that it was a subterranean attempt to reduce or exit Council's involvement in Raby Bay canal management and funding. That's why I've called it Ray Brexit. This Ray Brexit has produced fire and fury in canal residents and a threat of legal action. Four, the fourth one, is open the black box. The Canal Works program is a black box which will produce havoc when it's split open. Council has continually proclaimed its openness and consultativeness and often proudly pronounced how much information it collects and holds on canal walls. Our levy is paying for 5 canal system data collections, each of which is incomplete, and the 5 are incompatible and uncombinable. I have been trying unsuccessfully for 3 years to get a map of Raby Bay canals with data. The little bit I got was through FOI and it was woefully inadequate. 3 months ago, I changed tack and asked for basic information on my own wall, its location, its dimensions, and its stability. There has still been no reply, but I will continue to try. So I've been watching this over the past 5 years with great dismay. These are serious violations of good governance and proper accountability, as well as apparent transgressions of statutory and regulatory obligations and provisions. I call on Council to please explain and remedy them. There is a lot to remedy. Council's been seriously inept and incompetent in administering the Raby Bay levy and in constructing engineering works efficiently. The program is too slow, far too expensive, heavily overweight in engineering, and never evaluated for effectiveness. Over 20% of these expensive never-to-fail walls have failed, some more than once. And to compound the problem, Council has failed to protect canal walls properly in the new town plan, so that the future looks bleak. Many more tidal structures of high expense and ever-growing levy will be imposted on us, we fear. However, can I help? I am here to offer my help in dismantling these bombs. I have in mind a way to construct a proper program of works with a plan, a budget, and an end date. It is your responsibility as councillors to ask the CEO to produce this, and I am willing to outline my proposal to you if you wish. By the way, Aquatic Paradise is different from Raby Bay for several reasons, and Sovereign Waters is not governed by the Coastal Protection and Management Act because it is a lake and not tidal. So Raby Bay canals need a unique policy and program. Please let me know if you'd like me to come to another meeting and explain it.
Thank you, Ms. Johnston. Our next speaker is Mrs. Anne Hagen from Russell Island. Anne here. Anne, if you could just state your name and suburb or the organisation you represent, and you may start when you're ready.
Okay. I'm Anne Hagen, a resident and ratepayer of Russell Island, and here to talk about fire hazard issues and local laws. Some here know me as a community champion trained to run an evacuation centre, but I'm here as a private individual. I believe a fire hazard I reported near the Russell Island shops in December last year was dealt with wrongly under local laws, and I'm asking for a rethink of how council deals with a reported fire hazard. I'll also talk about a Facebook group that all relevant council staff should view. It's the Redland City Council Vegetation Neglect Southern Moreton Bay Island Blocks group. It's had many photos of properties, including council blocks, that need attention. First, the situation that worried me. I drive from Kniper Point through Fernbrook Avenue to park near Russell Island shops. Early last December, I saw large trees being felled on what was at least a double block. Over a fortnight, in sunny, dry summer weather, I saw the branches and leaves of these felled trees turn brown. On December 18, I reported it to council as a fire hazard. That day, I posted photos to the Facebook Vegetation Neglect group, and I referred the council officer taking my phone complaint to those photos, but was told the site wasn't looked at. This is a picture, one of the photos placed on the Facebook group. I've got some other photos here that I can hand around, but this is one that I blew up. After Christmas, I received a letter with a reference to my complaint about, quote, overgrown, unsightly, unquote, vegetation. I was surprised and alarmed by that classification. Nothing happened to clear the blocks in January. In fact, more trees were chopped down and left to crisp in the summer sun on, I think, another three adjoining blocks, one of them fronting the main Eastern Island route, Kniper Road. In mid-January, I phoned council to say more trees had been felled and to find out what, if anything, was happening, but the responsible officer was out and didn't return my call until at least a week later. I think her call was actually made in early February when the clearing had started. The hazard was removed by mid-February. I believe the handling of my complaint under local laws was wrong. It was seemingly handled under Local Law 3, Part 3, overgrown and unsightly allotments. I believe it should have been handled under Local Law 3, Part 4, fires and fire hazards. That's what I reported. If you look at Section 15, examples of fire hazards include, quote, dry vegetation that could be easily ignited or other flammable materials. And is sending out a compliance notice under either part of the local law good enough for a fire hazard near a main island road and shops? Shouldn't council be clearing it fast and billing the owner? And were there any penalties in this case? There needs to be a rethink, I believe, because if someone chops down huge trees near properties next summer and they go tinder dry, they should be removed as soon as possible. I believe that had this fire hazard been located near Victoria Point shops and homes or near another populated centre in the Redlands, it would have been acted on much faster. We islanders were lucky that nobody set it alight. Finally, relevant council staff and councillors should keep an eye on the Redlands City Council Vegetation Neglect Southern Moreton Bay Islands Block's Facebook page. Many islanders don't have ADSL or a big broadband plan, and duplicating large photo files to send to council comes at a cost. On this site, there are photos of neglected council blocks and dangerous trees, and there are comments about a lack of backburning in the south and concerns about the area around Sandy Beach. I'd urge all those responsible to look at this, and I'd urge a review of process and a change in thinking about how fire hazards are dealt with on the islands. And I have some something that could be shared with councillors.
Thank you, Ms Hagen. Our next speaker is Mrs Norma Ford. So if you just state your name and suburb or the organisation you represent, you can start.
My name is Norma Ford. I live at 5 Condamine Crescent, Thornlands. My talking about the relocation of a toilet block at Thornlands Community Park. The residents of Condamine Crescent are happy with the council's intention to put community facilities on the park opposite. However, the location of the proposed toilet block is not looked upon as ideal. When we purchased our blocks, we paid a premium price for the privilege of overlooking the natural park, but we were not informed by Villa World or any signage by council of a public toilet to be built adjacent to our front doors, approximately 92 metres away. We certainly would not have purchased the land had we been informed about the toilet block. There was no consideration for the residents when the park was designed on how it might affect them. We rang and sent emails to the council on a number of occasions to discuss this matter, but no one was interested or with our concerns gave us the brush off. If a toilet block is required, it would be better situated on the western edge of the new car park, away from the sight line of our homes in Condamine Crescent. This would also be a benefit to disabled persons for easier access from the car park. These are some concerns from the homeowners in Condamine Crescent. Looking at a toilet block outside our front doors, devaluation of our properties, won't feel as safe in our homes, smell from toilet block, excess traffic in our street, personal safety, obstruction to our views, quality of life, increased noise levels, privacy compromised, graffiti, encourage undesirables to use it as a meeting point for possible drug use. We already have issues with this problem in the estate. Police have been involved on more than one occasion. Considering the size of the park in its present form, why is it necessary to put all of these proposed facilities so close to the residents in Condamine Crescent? I must say it's a very, very sad day when a toilet facility takes priority over the well-being of the residents. If this toilet facility goes ahead in its present location, it will have destroyed any quality of life in our retirement years. Our plan certainly didn't include a toilet block as an outlook. Would the council members like a public toilet built outside their homes? Probably not, but it's okay for us.
Thank you, councillors. Can I have a mover and seconder that we resume meeting proceedings? Moved, Councillor Elliott. Seconded, Councillor Boglari. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried. Unanimously. Thank you. Now, there was some discussion about a petition. Councillor, was that? You haven't received
it yet? Thank you, Madam Mayor. I did ask in relation to a particular matter that...
Sorry? Excuse me, there are more people in the gallery wishing to speak. I thought we were extending the time.
I did look to see...
I haven't been advised of any other people wishing to address council or councillors, in which case I'm going to have to ask that we provide another 10 minutes and we...
I thought we were doing the extension.
Yeah, I wasn't aware, sorry, councillors, because no one raised their hands earlier. So if another 10 minutes, how many people would like to address council? Two? Councillor, can we just... suspend our meeting proceedings so that we can have 10 minutes of public participation. Move, Councillor Boglari. Seconded, Councillor Bishop. For that people who, if you just come towards, sorry. Are those in favour? Sorry. Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. My apologies. I've advised three, so my apologies, I wasn't advised, so...
Okay, that's fine. My name is Michael Bailey from Wellington Point. So good morning, Mayor, CEO and councillors. I'd just like to thank you now for the opportunity to address this council. The subject that I would like to talk to is the proposed development at 729 Fernbourne Road, which I believe council is assessing this morning. There are a number of community concerns, but I'll just address those that I think are the most fundamental in terms of what's been proposed. The first one is the density, and the proposed development has a density of 108 square metres as compared to, I'll use the word, the standard of 200 square metres. My view is that this 200 square metre guideline was put there for a reason. Long-term sustainability for occupiers in any development of this sort, I think, is fundamental. The tenancy dynamic for this development is going to be different to that of, for example, South Bank. And if we said there are, as the proposed 39 units, if we just argued that there might be 30% of those residents were taken up by families, and let's just say there were two children per family, all of a sudden you've got, you know, in excess of 20 children living in that type of environment. So this density needs to, I think, accommodate the type of tenancy dynamic, albeit that we can't actually project or say what it's going to be. I think we need to take a realistic view of what that tenancy dynamic will really look like. The second point is the communal space. And again, the 20% guideline was put there for a reason, and the proposed development has a 13.7%. I think the motivation that the council officers have put forward is that because of the landscaping around the perimeter that it makes that an acceptable point. This development really needs to be more than just a place to eat, sleep and watch TV and, you know, on electronic media. Residents need to be able to relax there on weekends without having to get into a car to drive somewhere to do so. And there are very little or no nearby parklands that residents in that precinct have. As existing residents, we're fortunate in that we do have enough, you know, big blocks. But I think back to, just as an example, the Jacob Street development, which is fairly nearby, there are, you know, a number of kids that play in the street because those lot sizes are fairly small. That's okay, it's a cul-de-sac. But if we had children in this environment starting to play in a place like Fernbourne Road, that's going to have a disastrous consequence. The third point is the streetscape and amenity. The initial proposal has been amended somewhat. However, I would submit to you that it is still significantly out of character for the surrounding precinct. I think it's unfair on the immediate neighbours, to the east and to the south, where particularly in the eastern scenario, there's a sloping terrain which makes a monolithic wall that is going to be placed in front of those residents that are currently there and under the development application for, the development approval for that existing site, future residents. As an example, I think it was probably about 12 years ago, there was a proposal for the Fernbourne Grove Villas, and the frontage on Fernbourne Road was limited to a two-storey development to accommodate that sort of streetscape character. At the time, the next-door resident was Fernbourne House, which sadly has since burned down. In closing, our Redland City vision talks to points of a healthier natural environment, wise planning and design. This gets expanded into best practice and within community expectations. Livability includes physical activity as well. Progress measurement includes the level of community satisfaction with what's happening. So I'd just like to acknowledge there's been a lot of time and effort that's been put into this proposal by the developers themselves and their consultants, by the council and the council officers, and by the community. Okay? There were 91 submissions that were made, and I understand, I didn't know about this, but I understand there were another further two petitions, one that achieved 50 and another that achieved 207, I think, which means there's been in excess of 350 voices from the community to this proposed development, and the changes since then have been somewhat marginal. My ask of you is that we acknowledge the wishes of the community who have been very active participants in this process. This isn't an objection to the development in its entirety. Yes, I suppose a lot of us would like to see three residential houses that are there as they currently are. However, what we would like to say, what I would propose to say, is that the development does proceed, but on a substantially revised format that meets those issues around density, communal space, and the streetscape and amenity. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. We have one other speaker. Just a reminder to state your name and suburb or the organisation you represent, and you may start when you're ready.
My name's Peter Roethlisberg. I'm another resident of Fernbourne Road, and I'll be speaking to the same development, particularly in that it's being assessed against what I'm led to believe is a transit-oriented development, namely higher densities because it is near a train station for public transport. And again, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm a big supporter of public transport, that's buses and trains, and physical transport, namely bikes and walking. I do both. I commute to work on a train, and I go to the shops by bike. I'm also a big proponent of urban infill, if it's sensitive. If done right, it potentially protects the environment. It prevents more urban sprawl and thereby affords residents a higher level of service and a better quality of life. Put those two things together and it makes a great deal of sense to increase density near transport hubs. But Wellington Point train station is not a transport hub. Compare Wellington Point station against Thornside, against Ormiston, against Birkdale, and against Cleveland stations. Wellington Point is embedded in a quiet, family-oriented residential neighborhood with narrow streets and limited footpath. It's not near shops. It's not very close to schools, and most parents choose to drive their kids. If you get on the morning and the afternoon on Main Road or Birkdale Road, you'll know what I mean. It's not serviced by buses or well-serviced. In fact, I'm not sure it's serviced at all anymore. When I come and go at peak hour, there are no buses available for passengers. And it doesn't have adequate off-street parking. So in my point of view, one size does not fit all. Welly Point Station does not fit the criteria for a transit hub. Ironically, the increased development near the station is increasing residential density. It's creating congestion, largely because of inadequate off-street parking. It's increasing local traffic and concomitant concerns by parents of pedestrian traffic for their kids going to school. It does all that rather than alleviate those issues. However, I think the Redland Council continues to approve so-called transit-oriented developments near train stations with the belief that they will alleviate these conditions. Further, the Council reviews each development proposal in isolation. It does not seem to be an apparent town plan. And it doesn't recognize the cumulative impact of individual decisions. Those who live here are the ones that do. All these concerns have been repeatedly raised by residents at community meetings and responses to each development application. Mike mentioned there are over 350 responses to the current development plan. This is not a knee-jerk, not-in-my-backyard reaction. It's about feedback from the community saying that the area has reached and is now exceeding limits of development. We live in a representative democracy. Elected officials have an obligation to residents, ratepayers, and voters to maintain and enhance community values such as safety, amenity, service, lifestyle, and the environment. The residents of Wellington Point chose to live and invest in this neighborhood with the expectation that these values would not be eroded and devalued. Their voice and an opinion must be heard and it must be honored. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillors, are there any other speakers? Just double check. There being none, I'll ask that we resume our meeting proceedings. Move Councillor Elliott, seconded Councillor Edwards. Those in favour? Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. Now, back to petitions and presentations. Councillor Boglari, I believe you have a petition.
Yes, thank you. I'd like to move that this petition is of an operational nature and be received and referred to the Chief Executive Officer for consideration.
You may just want to state what the petition is.
It is a petition from residents of Ormiston Springs requesting that the Department of Transport provide and install two bus stops, eastbound and westbound, in close proximity to the main entrance to Ormiston Springs, Gordon Street, Ormiston.
Moved Councillor Boglari, seconded Councillor Edwards. No further discussion required. I'll just put the motion. Yep. Those in favour? Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. Thank you. No other petitions or presentations?
No?
Okay. Order of business. Do we have a mover and second to the order of business? Move Councillor Boglari.
If I may, I'd like to move that 11.2.3 Fernbourne Road, Wellington Point, come forward due to the interest in the gallery.
Sure. Moved Councillor Boglari, seconded Councillor Bishop. Any discussion, councillors? Sorry? I'll let you have the vote. That's fine. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried. Those in favour, Councillor Boglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Edwards, Elliott, Tolte, Gleeson, Bishop Williams. Those against, Councillor Hughes. Thank you. All right. Well, just quickly before we turn to that item, just a reminder of your material personal interest, conflict of interest, councillors, under the Local Government Act 2009 in relation to a councillor's material personal interest or conflict of interest about a matter that is to be discussed at a meeting, and that summary of those responsibilities are included in your agenda. So with that, we'll go straight to item 11.2.3. Councillor Boglari, you'd like to move an alternative motion?
I'd like to move an alternative motion, which was sent through last night and should be able to be up on the board.
Just making sure that councillors have received that.
Yes, most of them acknowledged
that.
So, only a does.
Well, we'll debate that through the floor. So just move Councillor Boglari, seconded Councillor Hughes. Councillor Boglari, would you like to speak to your motion?
Oh, yes, thank you. I was just going to wait for it to come up. I'm sure Liz can find it. There's been no changes, councillors, except the word does has been put into dot point one and has been put into dot point two. Just a couple of grammatical errors that were picked up. Thank you. So I'll speak to the points as we go through. So dot point one, the proposed development is incompatible with medium density living, and I'm sure you can read the rest. The medium density residential zone has a probable solution for density as residential uses above a density of one achieve a density of one dwelling per 200 metres square of the site area. Now, I haven't got that written in there because this is a probable solution and they cannot be used referenced as refusal grounds. However, the specific outcome can. So the we all know we've got the probable solutions and specifics and the overall outcomes. So the probable solution is 1 to 200. You can achieve a different density if you still achieve the specific outcome. In this case, it does not achieve the specific outcome as listed in dot point one because it doesn't meet the communal open space. The communal open space is mentioned again in dot point number two. Though, as the report states, there is a total of 506 metre square of communal open space, the apartment building code in the Redlands Planning Scheme nominates 20% of the site should be communal open space. This proposal, providing only 13.7%, is in conflict with the scheme with a shortfall of 6.3%. The report states the communal open space is sufficient. However, I believe this is a very subjective assessment as I know this area and it is already lacking in sufficient play and recreational infrastructure due to recent infill over the last 5 to 6 years. The park, which has been mentioned to me, which children of this area could use, is in Jacob Street. It is too far away for any young child to be able to walk under adult supervision. Without adult supervision, and children in that area now are actually playing in the streets because there's not enough park infrastructure. So therefore, it's very important that this development has 20%, which is required for the communal open space under the specific outcome of the apartment building code. In number three, the proposed development does not provide a layout and design that will enhance the built form of the surrounding streetscape. This area is a very unique street. Fernbourne Road is one of the areas with the quietest tree-lined street you would find in Redlands, with a character that is probably more becoming to Boona or some rural town. Within 50 metres of this proposal is actually an old dirt track leading down to Hilliard's Creek. This foreshore wetland area is internationally recognised as a Ramsar site with significant environmental values, and there are also heritage values in the street dating back to our pioneering days with our residents still living in these buildings and actually valuing our heritage and maintaining these homes from the 18th century. It has such a unique and valued character of the street that the bulk and size of this proposal does not meet this specific outcome of the building code where it is not allowed to be detrimental to any existing character. I believe all the residents of the area and most Redlands residents actually understand that going forward we're going to have change and we're going to have different developments. However, it's Council's responsibility to ensure we don't destroy the spirit of the Redlands and the lifestyle and the values that everybody here actually cherishes. And this is what the residents have mentioned this morning. They understand that there will be some development. They're actually asking, though, that it comes back within the guidelines of the Redlands Planning Scheme. And these guidelines and specific outcomes were actually put there for this reason. The planning scheme states that the primary use of MDR is for multiple dwellings. However, the site should be in proximity to centres, services and facilities, and public transport is to be maximised for these dwellings. The only one that this development actually ticks is close proximity to a very suburban train station. This is not a centre. I actually worked out with a local resident, if I actually lived in these units and wanted to get to Capalabar, it would actually take me 15 minutes by bus. So no one is actually going to use a bus to get there. If you work in Brisbane City or Cleveland, you'll be fine to catch the train because that's the directions it takes you. But for absolutely anything else, you'll need to get into your car. Wellington Point Village is too far to walk if you're going to see a doctor or to get any groceries, more than one bag. So this proposed development is not on a main road with easy access, but it is down and around suburban streets. There is no centre, which has already been mentioned, but it is a quiet residential street with a train station for commuters. It is not a destination. Recently, I have had various requests over the last few months for stop signs and traffic management in the area, as cyclists have found themselves in compromising positions with the increase in traffic already in this area. There was a subdivision just to the south, which was put in previously. That wasn't actually zoned for this density. So we have an increased density in this area, which wasn't predicted. So in summary, this development is actually in conflict with three specific outcomes and two overall outcomes. So sometimes, councillors, we sit in here and we don't like parts of a development that come before us, but we're tied up because the planning scheme agrees and it complies. This time we actually have grounds to get a better outcome. And I think, as councillors, it is our responsibility to represent the Redlands community to ensure overall best outcomes and to be a watchdog. So when developers come along with applications that push those limits, it is up to us to ensure they come back within the guidelines. And as I want to just repeat, there are planning grounds this time to refuse it.
Thank you, Councillor Baglari. The Mayor has given her apologies. She's had to step out for an interview. So I'll take speakers for the motion at the present time. Councillor Gleeson.
Question, Chair. I'd just like to qualify, please, before going any further. I know one of the residents that live in one of these houses on the subject site. They don't own it, so they have no material interest in it. But I'd just like clarification, just in case I get called up for conflict of interest. I don't think I have one, but I would like to declare potential perceived and just confirm that that's okay.
Are you saying that you can stay in the meeting on that basis, Councillor Gleeson?
I'll stay in the meeting for the vote, thank you.
Speakers against then, isn't it? Councillor Edwards.
Thank you. I'm not going to support any changes to this. To me, the officers, I think, have got it right. Of any area that you want to have this increased density is around train stations or bus interchanges. I don't know how many times we hear about people complaining about developments going near them. They say, you know, I'm not against development, but I'm afraid this whole area around here, I think, is absolutely suited for higher intensity development. It's close walking distance to that train station. If we're not going to support higher intensification around transport nodes such as this, I don't think we should be supporting anything. I mean, the officers have assessed it. It's a perfect location for it. And sure, there's going to be change, but there's always going to be change. Our city doesn't, nowhere stays the same as it is. Everything changes. We've got population demands and growth, and I'd rather see intensification of unit development around transport nodes, which takes pressure off our motor vehicle use and roads. I just feel this is a reaction to local residents' concerns, and I appreciate that. But I think for the longer term development of the city, this is the sort of development we need. I'm going to support the officer's recommendation. I'm not going to support any changes to it.
Thank you, Councillor Edwards. Any speakers for? Councillor Gleeson.
Thanks, Chair. I'm going to support the change amended motion. Look, I totally understand what Councillor Edwards says about the higher density around train stations, and I know what's been said this morning, but this site is probably ideal for that, because these residents are not going to want to leave their units and drive to the station. They're going to walk there anyway, so it's perfect for that. But in my head, I just can't bring myself down to agreeing to one in 108 square metres. To me, that's just way too high density. The goal is one in 200 square metres. That's almost double the intended density of the site. So I really, just on that pure, on that basis alone, I can't support it. Sorry, I can't support the original motion. That's why I'm supporting the alternative motion.
Thank you, Councillor Gleeson. Any speakers against? Councillor Elliott?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Similar to Councillor Edwards, this is where you do build these things. I would be supportive if the mover wanted to give them approval subject to the height. I think the height's the issue for me. The rest will look after itself. But certainly, this is next to a railway station. Doesn't get much closer except on top of it. It's walking distance to a shop. Pretty sure the Wellington Point State School is still where it was last week. This is close to everything. If we don't pursue these, and in Alexandra Hills, I'll give an example, in the 06 scheme, I pushed to get the 100 lots next to the shopping centre to medium density, because there are people in the suburbs and who want to stay in that suburb, want to get out of mowing the grass and move into those types of things. I support that. If you want to go across the road into urban res, I'll fight it vigorously. I actually opposed just the dual occupancy of a block just down the road from me in that medium density because we weren't getting enough out of it. I just think that's what these blocks are for. You don't waste them. They're about maximising that close to train. The gentleman actually spoke about going to train, riding a bike, ticking all the boxes, does all the right things. They're the A-class citizens we all want. I just can't see that. If we continue to do this, we will be regarded as no development. We take the business, business sign up down because we're not interested in it. I'd love it to be three stories high, 50 units. Everybody knows. But take that up with the state government, whether it's the LNP, the Labor, the Greens or whatever. These are the guys that set the overarching principles for these performance-based schemes. So these are the hands we're dealt with. We'll go to court on this one. It's big enough. This isn't a mum and dad that we're going to take on. This will be somebody big that will have deep pockets. It ticks most of the boxes, and I think that's the reality.
Thank you, Councillor Elliott. Speakers for. Councillor Hughes.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Welcome to the Chair, indeed. In support of the motion, and again, speaking against my colleague on my right, Councillor Elliott, when you've just said ticks most of the boxes, no, it doesn't. We are talking about the density. We understand, and Councillor Gleeson has just given the numbers. I'll say them again. 108 square metres is achieved, which exceeds the 200 square metre deemed to comply solution. Not only are we, I'll choose my words carefully, squashing these people in at half the rate or double the population, we're also here with our communal open space. We're intensifying the population in this development, and we're cutting their open space if we let this through. Absolutely support the motion, and very disappointed for those that don't. Thank you.
Point of order. Yeah. I'd like that withdrawn.
My apologies. I'm just
casting aspersions on the council that's spoken against this application. Yeah. I'd like it withdrawn.
Yeah. I ask that to be withdrawn, Councillor Hughes.
Thank you. I will withdraw.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor.
Okay, so we're up to a speaker against, I believe. Just coming up to.
Madam Mayor, I'm using standing orders to identify that this is an absolute dilemma that we face, as several councillors have already identified. This is within a few hundred metres of a school. It's within 200 metres of a train station. The highly desirable Wellington Point Village is not far up the road, and it is exactly the sort of place where a transport-oriented design solution should be located. And yet, the issues that have been identified by the local residents, and particularly, and I have to say emphatically, by the local councillor Councillor Boglari, identifying the subtlety of that area in terms of heritage, in terms of character, amenity, and the challenge of accessing any of the essential services beyond the school and the train requiring a car is it's not been designed by we, the elected representatives, to be connected to that village. And I think there's an absolute responsibility on our part as elected representatives to design these transport-oriented centres, if this is going to be one, to be integrated. And I don't believe that we have effectively done that. So I'm identifying that we are torn in this situation. I'm speaking for, but I must admit, I also acknowledge that the density in this place is way over
I'm
the
just
threshold.
Checking, are you speaking against the motion or for the motion, Councillor?
I'm identifying that we as the elected representatives have not spent the
yes,
last
no.
few years
it's
nuancing
a yes, no question.
This place.
Are you speaking for? You just mentioned that you were speaking for. I'm just double checking because proceedings require you to be speaking for the motion or against the motion currently.
I'm speaking against this
you.
Motion
just
on the grounds of the fact that we need to be very clear about where our TODs are. We have not discussed this area as being a TOD.
Point of order, Mayor. Can we we're using the word TOD. There's two TODs in this town. One's at Clean, one's at Capella Bar.
That's right.
This is development close to a transit. It's not a TOD. Thank you.
Continue.
And using that as justification for this being a centre that is proposed for higher density. I believe that we need to nuance that as ourselves, and we need to have further discussions about where we threshold and go above those densities. So I'm finding myself absolutely caught. And I, while I'm speaking against it, because I generally support the principle of higher intensity in these areas, and I think the residents understand the need for that, I also have some concerns about that happening in this instance in the absence of our designing connectivity to open space parklands, to the centres that people will need to get to and from. And I also acknowledge that the development has actually got more parking than required. So that will address the car parking allocation above the threshold. So speaking for, but find myself very much torn about how I will actually vote.
Speaking against. Sorry, you said just...
I'm speaking against the motion.
Thank you.
Torn about how I will vote
thank
in terms
you. Just
of
clarifying, because
putting it into the Redlands context.
Particularly speaker for councillors. Councillor Hewlett.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. At first, when I looked at this, and we get a lot of development applications across our desk every week, and the first thing I look at is the density. And I'm a little bit conflicted because I don't believe that we can't use probable solutions in a refusal motion. However, when this planning scheme that we're looking at, the current planning scheme was consulted, and I'm sure it was consulted widely, the people around Wellington Point would have had a say in the densities in those areas. When they looked at medium density, they looked at what it said, 1 in 200, which is townhouses and villas generally. You can get a much better design outcome. To me, this presents as a really large bulk form on the street. It's a beautiful street. It should be a character zone or a heritage area. It's an absolutely beautiful street. And I would hate to see something like that building at the end of my street if I lived in Fernbourne Road. So, yes, it's about the density. I'm concerned about the overlooking of the retirement village to the rear. I'm also concerned about the height going over 1.3 over the specific outcome. So I'm going to support Councillor Boglari and the community today and vote for her motion. Thank you.
Speaker against. Councillor Mitchell.
Yeah, we'll speak against the motion today. I think we're getting a little bit rich on some of the reasons. However, I do so support the density around our transport hubs. I think it is close to the village. It is close to the transport hub. We're talking about 4 feet. A small child is the height difference in the building. I think let's get real when we talk about these things. I do have a problem with the communal open space, though. I think that is something that I'd like to see improved. So, but there's not enough in it for me to support a refusal, but I would like to see some further negotiations, particularly on the open space. I think it ticks so many boxes on what we talk about for strategic long-term outcomes for our community, and to talk. Some of the facts around density are so arbitrary that we tend to think that the community is going to be ruined. That's just so incorrect. And a height of 4 feet on the building, really? You won't even notice. So I think I will vote against this motion, but I'd love to see some more negotiations around the open space on this particular development.
Speaker 4. Councillor Tolte, for the motion.
Yes, thanks, Madam Chair. I understand and don't disagree with the arguments that have been put forward by the speakers against. And this does look like a quality development. And were it, you know, on Main Road perhaps or closer to the shops, you know, I think we'd probably be very supportive of it. For my part, I'm looking at the density and the open space, and I think the footprint is just too significant on the site. I think that the footprint needs to be reduced. I'm not worried about the height. If it went up higher, you know, I don't think that would be an issue. Once you've built something to this level, another story doesn't make any difference. But I think the open space on the ground and, as has been highlighted by Councillor Boglari, the need to provide that serviceable open space for families where we've got more children living in apartments and units and to think differently about how that space can be used is really important, and I'm not seeing it in this development.
Sure. Councillor Golly.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just a couple of questions. And I'm coming from the area of the strategies that we actually appear to be working on presently. That area looks to accommodate approximately, say, 6 to 10 cars over the three houses. This is going to duplicate about 200 cars on that site if it goes ahead in its current form.
200 car movements.
Well, it's if we look at two cars per unit, isn't it about 100 units? Oh, is it my mistake? Well, either way, it's going to be quite a few more vehicles in that area for that street. But I just wanted to ask, was the councillor allowed to attend any pre-lodgement meeting for this? And that if the density was to be brought into question so much.
I don't think it's really relevant to our discussion today.
How come? Well, Councillor, I'm just asking because
I think you can ask that question offline if you want to. But
there's
I don't
the focus on the density.
Yep.
And my understanding is why have we sort of got to this point if the density seems to be such an issue?
I'm going to stop you there because the councillor doesn't have any input at a pre-lodgement meeting at all. These recommendations come to us from the professional advice of officers who have degrees and qualifications in planning. And councillors don't have any influence on that. And if they do, you would know the right process to deal with that. But I can assure you that this isn't really relevant to what the recommendation is to us today. And we have an opportunity here, if you don't like what you see, as the elected representatives to, we've got three opportunities, refuse it, approve it, or ask for it to be conditioned to a point where it can be acceptable to the community. At the moment, we're debating one of those options. And I think it's best we stick to that so we don't cloud it with any other discussions of who and when.
Thanks, Madam Chair.
Okay, well, if I might just probably in response, and I feel like it's Groundhog Day because when we have these applications and the community seems to think that as elected representatives our only obligation is to people who live in our city and vote for us. In a perfect world that might be the case, but the fact is we have an obligation not only to our current residents but our future residents of this city, and we also have a distinct obligation to meet state legislation, which is what we don't often talk about. Many times I've personally argued with the state, or at least put forward the case, that the greyness of a planning scheme has some great things about it because you can get very different approaches to delivering housing in our communities. At the same time, it allows for big gaps and for developers to apply for anything anywhere, and we don't have the discretion to say yes or no. Greyness of a planning scheme allows these things to happen. It's also true that We have had discussions about where our density should be in the city. We have it every time we look at our town plan or whether we respond to the regional plan. And clearly infill has been located in our city as close as possible to transport, whether it be bus or rail. And hence, this is why we have what we have today. We're discussing our transport strategy, and I'm sure that the community will be very interested in that, and this type of development is what is actually supported. And no, it doesn't mean that every single trip that someone has to make living in this part of the world will be on public transport, but it will actually reduce the need for many of those people on all of their trips to actually hop in a car. And we have a very car-oriented community, and as you go further south, it actually gets worse. And so hence, it's why we, the state, encourages us to have infill in our community. I'm just going to say that I'm a little bit disappointed that we've chosen just to go out with a blatant refusal, because my understanding is that we could have probably conditioned the concerns of our community into this approval. It does say subject to conditions. What happens when we refuse this outright? We actually do lose a certain level of negotiation with the developer, and sometimes it will be decided by someone that's completely foreign to our community, like people who preside in the Planning and Environment Court. So we lose some of the traction by just going to an outright refusal, but that is what is before us this morning, and for that reason, I'm probably going to be voting against the motion. I would have preferred to negotiate a better outcome for our community on the issues that they've all raised, and I think they are decent issues, but we would have had a better starting point negotiating our way out of it with a further amendments to the recommendation today. So if there are no other speakers, I will hand back to Councillor Boglari. Councillor Elliott.
Just supporting what you said, Mayor, that I'm just putting it out there to the mover, that if this went down and it was put up for an approval subject to those conditions, specific outcomes being met, I would be supportive of that. They would have to go away. Okay, well, I'm just suggesting now before we get too far and there's a vote. I'm just suggesting that.
I note that formal proceedings, we do have a motion, however, that's been moved and seconded, and that is what we are going to be voting on. So I just need to understand if that motion goes down, how we approach an alternative. Councillor Boglari.
Oh, thank you, and thank you, everyone, for your comments. Yesterday, I said after we had a workshop and a very informal discussion about this that I would go and work with officers on the best way forward, and this was the way I was advised. I got told to go like this and that the negotiations and everything would still be...
Just to be clear, the only recommendation the officers have made is one printed in your agenda.
Yes, but I asked for advice on how I should have my wording, whether it should be for a motion of approval with further conditions or should it be this way. And advice I got was this way. So that's why I'm bringing this here today. I got told that negotiations and that could still happen. If this does go down, I am happy to put up another motion with conditions. But I have been told it would... negotiations would still be occurring this process. I was just going to address some other issues that were discussed. It was referred to as a transport node. I don't believe this is a transport node. There's no area around the train station that is zoned for commercial zoning. And normally in a transport zone node, people can get off the train, they can go to a chemist or they can go to a food store and they can pick up those bits and pieces on the way home, and that is not what this one has. On the discussions of density, yes, I did have several discussions with developers and several discussions with the community on the point of density. And throughout the last few months, the applicant actually changed the density from 41 units to 39 units. So that is the outcome that we got from those discussions. But yes, I did have discussions with them. There have been concerns about the communal open space. Well, the communal open space is due to the density of stacking them in. to get a better outcome. If we go down this track, negotiations will happen. Negotiations, we all know, happen before quite often these sort of cases end up in court, and that's where we can address the communal open space. I think, as the resident said this morning, and I think we all agree, that yes, a department building will probably end up going here. What we're asking for is for the developer not to push the boundary so far, but to bring it back in line with the planning scheme. If the density was decreased, the number of units was decreased, then the councillors and the community's concern about the communal open space would also be improved. So it was said here today that there's a lot of grey areas in the planning scheme, and that there is, and that's what this developer is using. And it has also been said here today, we have to work with the hand we've been dealt with. Well, the hand we've been dealt with today is that there are specific outcomes and overall outcomes which aren't being achieved. So we've got the hand to be able to refuse this and get a better outcome for our community. So I'm asking you to please support this motion.
Just before I take the vote, I'm just going to get some clarity from David, or officers from DA, Chris, David, whichever one drew the short straw. Just in regards to, we've referred to the different ways we could handle an application like this, one being a refusal, one being changing some of the conditions and adding conditions, or the other one being an approval, and just the negotiation starting points on those. So it's been stated in here that there was advice that the best way would be to be a refusal. My explanation, I'm just bringing up to speed, David, was that officer's recommendation is in black and white here in the agenda. And I'll just get you to perhaps talk about the different ways we can negotiate the outcomes that the community have very clearly articulated this morning.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, and good morning, councillors. Absolutely correct. The officer recommendation is in the report. It's a recommendation to approve because officers believe that the proposal does comply with the planning scheme. Councillor Voglari has an alternative motion to refuse the development. That's certainly an option. And in that scenario, the applicant has an option to appeal through the Planning and Environment Court. Through an appeal process, there are certain steps that we go through, including mediation, through a court-appointed mediator. That still provides an opportunity for ongoing negotiation with the party. Another option would be to issue a preliminary approval subject to conditions, and those conditions could possibly be framed around the reasons for refusal. In that scenario, the applicant could still appeal to the court directly, or they could seek to negotiate through counsel. In either scenario, there are still opportunities for ongoing negotiation. And what I would say is that, for the last probably 2 years, there's been negotiations on this application. They have made changes. So I don't know what appetite there might be for further negotiations through council.
Thank you. Councillors, we've summed up. So with that, there are no further questions. I will put the motion. Question, Councillor.
Can I ask a question, please, Mayor? If this doesn't get up, and I would also support conditions in an alternative motion, but are we going to know what those conditions are we're going to agree to beforehand? I mean, can we suspend the meeting for 15 minutes and just determine whether I'm happy with those conditions?
We'll need to take the vote now, Councillor, and then we
vote here.
My question through to John is that if this motion goes down, we have an opportunity to bring forward another motion.
Well, I'd like to know what those conditions we would apply to.
Well, I think it's been said pretty clearly. It's what you see up there would just be conditioned. This would be conditioned into that. So that's exactly what those conditions would be, because that is reflecting the community's concerns. Councillor Elliott.
Just in addition to that,
Councillor Tolte.
Well, this is a bit out of order, Madam Mayor, but
it is definitely
as we're already on that ground. Look, to my mind, and I'm not a planner, but these issues are quite broad, and when we normally bring an application through for an approval with conditions, we can specifically say what we want. I think when we've got plans that are this detailed, to say reduce the density and reduce the footprint as a condition is basically saying go back to the drawing board and start all over again, which is what you do when you make a refusal. So that's why I'm supporting a refusal in this case, because I can't see how we can condition what we're hoping for from these plans.
Councillors, I'm just going to ask someone just to ask, but to request a suspension of meeting proceedings for 10 minutes, or make it 15 minutes, because I can see there's a little bit of sort of shakiness on this motion, and I think people want to understand that, and I totally agree we have to be more specific, and Councillor Elliott probably alluded to that as well. So with your indulgence, if I could ask someone to move a suspension for 15 minutes, so that brings up, let's say we come back at 10 past 11, moved Councillor Gleeson, seconded Councillor Mitchell. Those in no, we're just taking a break in the proceedings, so we may come back to that vote. Yep, those in favour. Those against. Was that in favour? Suspend. Yeah, unanimous. Thank you. So, councillors, can I just remind you that you are now... Councillors, I remind you. Are you all listening to me? Hello?
Listen to me.
Just reminding you that we are now back in session and we'll need a motion to resume the meeting. The video and audio is now back on. Councillor Bishop moves that we proceed with our meeting. Seconded Councillor Mitchell. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried. I now go to Councillor Boglari, who wishes to move an amendment, and I'll leave that to you, Councillor Boglari, as is on the...
Thank you. I'd like to move an amendment to the motion as per the board. If you could just put it down a little bit so that top line could be read.
Councillor Hughes, you accept that as a seconder of the motion, so that's moved the...
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, happy to second.
The amendment's been seconded by Councillor Hughes. So now, councillors, we are now debating the amendment. So can I just... I might just ask Councillor Boglari if she'd like to talk to it quickly before I take the vote, because just to explain that we've gone through this process that delivers the outcome that we believe the community is asking for.
Mm. The main issues that the community asked for were in the previous motion. Most of the other aspects of this actual application did comply with the planning scheme, and councillors did have that concern that there mightn't have been enough to actually go forward on a flat-out refusal. Having the motion changed to be a preliminary approval, but it has incorporated all of the concerns that the residents had, so they are still going to be addressed, the density, the bulk, the communal open space, the aspect of the streetscape. So what the community has been speaking to me about is still in this motion as per the other motion. It's just that it will add another step of negotiations rather than being straight to a court case, which some councillors had a concern about. So with that, I'd just like to put this motion.
Councillors, so we're now voting just on the amendment, not the motion, councillors. So those in favour of the amendment? Those against? Motion is unanimous. Thank you, councillors. Now we have the motion before us, and I don't believe we need to discuss that any further. Once again, moved and seconded by Councillor Hughes. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried. So those in favour is Councillor Boglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Bishop, Councillor Williams. Those against, Councillor Edwards. Thank you, councillors. Thank you for your negotiation, and thank you to the people in the public gallery for giving us some time to sort that out. Thank you. Moving on, councillors, back to the beginning of our agenda. Item 11.1.1. If I could get a mover and seconder. I'm just making sure I've got this. Councillor Gleeson, you're the chair. Would you like to move that? It's just an, the audit report on the audit committee. Move, Councillor Gleeson. Seconded, Councillor Mitchell. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor?
Thanks, Mayor. Not a lot to speak about. Kind words from the Queensland Audit Office and from our external auditors. And I thank the finance team. They were in good shape.
Any speakers against? There being none, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried. Councillor Boglari is absent. Councillors 11.1.2, the amended corporate plan. Councillor Bishop, would you like to move that? Move, Councillor Bishop. Seconded. Councillor Mitchell, would you like to speak to it, Councillor Bishop?
No, just to move the motion as amended corporate plan 2018 to 2023. Just moving the officer's recommendation after the consultation phase.
Thank you, Councillor Bishop. Any speakers against? There being none, I put the motion. Those in favour, those against, the motion is carried. Councillor Boglari is absent. She's back. It's all good. Item 11.1.3 is local law amendments to go out to community consultation. Councillor Elliott, happy to move that?
I am.
And seconder, councillors. Councillor Edwards seconded. Councillor Elliott, oh, pardon me, noting that there's a slight change to the motion to include the correct mapping.
Oh, yeah.
So we might just get that up so that you're all comfortable with that. Not till we have the motion. Just pointing out.
Number 8.
So there was just an error in the maps attached, so the recommendation just acknowledges that and replaces that with the correct mapping, councillors. So that just to be really clear. And there, I just saw it. Item C. All comfortable? Comfortable, Councillor Elliott and Councillor Edwards? Yep. All right, would you like to speak to it, Councillor Elliott?
Yes, briefly. Thanks, Mayor. This is... we've workshopped this to death, I can tell you, to the community. This is up for public consultation. There's quite a few local laws there. We're looking for comment. As the Mayor's alluded to, the changes there is simply the mapping was incorrect at the time of issue when it went online, and we've addressed that. So I would urge, strongly urge councillors not to get into debate on it. Let it go to community consultation. Let the community have a look at it. And if you want to make a submission, when it comes back, we can have a look at the things there. Thank you.
Speaker against? Councillor Tolte?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Look, I don't think that these are developed enough. There are issues that I still have with it. Documents have been sent to me talking about how we came to this one container per property regulation. I don't think councillors have looked at it closely enough. That's my view. Representing the majority of the people who live in the rural and acreage area in the city, we've got a requirements for keeping a dog in a koala area, item 1A. The third dot point says ensure that the dog is kept within the koala area enclosure at all times. Whereas B says that, or C says that it's only has to be denned between sunset and sunrise. I think that's contrary to itself. With regard to my main objections are the wording of the koala of the requirements for keeping a dog, particularly on large acreage lots, and the provisions for containers, again on rural properties. I don't think that's been discussed enough. I think that ultimately we have these situations come along all the time, and as Councillor Elliott said, let it go to public consultation. But what happens is it goes to public consultation. We only have 21 days. That's another objection I have. I think that it should be a longer period of consultation. And people don't put pen to paper. They jump on Facebook and complain, but they don't. And then when it comes back to us, we get a report that says, well, we didn't get many submissions, so it must be fine. I think that these concerns should have been more adequately addressed before we decided to go out to public consultation, so I won't be supporting it. Thank you.
Speaker 4, Councillor Bishop.
I think I'd just like to acknowledge Councillor Tolte has different views, and I think that's exactly what this next phase talks about. It asks those who have differing views to what council officers have proposed in this these amended local laws to be addressed through the proper process. Don't hop on Facebook. Go to the submissions page and be associated with what council needs to hear, which is the right information at the right time. It starts 21 days commencing the 23rd of May. So 21 days for people who do believe that these may have some impact on their lives. If anyone pays attention, you'll be representing many others who may not be engaged or interested, but these things do have a real impact on residents in our community, so I encourage everyone to have a look through this. There's many, many pages here, and this is only part of our overall local laws, but it's how we design our city for the people to make it as livable and appropriate as possible. So I encourage people to be involved and to pay attention, so please do that. Thank you.
Speaker against. Councillor Boglari, did you have a question?
I've already had a couple of phone calls just from the community with questions about it, and I've just wanted to reassure everyone it is community consultation. They're not set in stone today. I just wanted to make sure that was very clear.
Same? Yep, OK. Comment, Councillor Mitchell?
Yeah, sorry, ma'am. Yeah, I'm talking more for the islands. I mean, I think it is so important that the public do get a chance to comment here, and there is a number of points with the around parking and some of the other local laws that the islands are particularly interested in. I'm just concerned that some of the coverage, like in the newspaper out on the islands, that they don't all get the local paper, so that's one sort of lesser opportunity for the advertising that they get. Also, the internet coverage sometimes a bit sketchy, so some of those opportunities might come through. So I'm just suggesting, is it possible to get some sort of a notice put up on the community notice boards on the islands, just saying these are up for consultation and how that's done?
I'm getting a nod from our comms team at the back, so that would be every island?
Yes.
Thank you.
Please.
Councillor Golay?
Thanks, Madam Mayor. I concur with both Councillor Tolte and Councillor Mitchell. Down in the Waterline Estate in the heart of Thornlands, they don't actually receive the Redland City Bulletin. I have contacted Fairfax Media to see if they can actually receive copies of the bulletin, so they won't get any notification. I too have received phone calls this morning asking questions about will the four dog rule impact known and mapped koala areas out in the rural areas? So there's already discussion happening, but as Councillor Tolte said, I think, and if there's a way to do it, can we extend the consultation for 40 days rather than 21 days to give ample time for residents to catch on to what's actually going on? I only ask that based on the experience of, as we've seen this morning, we've had 2 years worth of public consultation and residents are starting to sort of come out of the woodwork now after seeing things on Facebook about moving a toilet. So if we could extend the consultation time, that would be fantastic.
That would require an amendment, I imagine, or an addition to the recommendation.
It actually says for at least 21. So it's actually, it's a minimum. So
officers can make that decision to extend it if necessary. Yep. Getting that nod from the back. Okay. Councillor Gleeson.
Thanks, Mayor. I've got some big problems with a few of these in here, and I really hope that the media in our city jump on board this and really get the message out there to our residents about what changes are going to affect them and how it's going to affect them, because some of these things are life-changing for some people. They're very important decisions.
Any other comments? Sorry, councillors. I think it's really important to note that some of the provisions are already there. and that we're talking about specifics to each of these local law amendments. Excuse me. Yeah, it's a sad day for local laws. Well, I can't speak about it. So I think it would be great if, and I'm sure that Cheryl, we can give you a really good briefing as to what the changes are proposed, that we can encourage our community to best get their voices heard on these issues, hopefully in a couple of months' time, or however long it takes for us to process it, that we can come back and have the debates based on community sentiment on each of these issues. So I'll stop at that before I lose my voice. Any other comments? Hand back to you, Councillor Elliott, if you want to sum up.
Just simply, yes, I can only endorse what Councillor Bishop says fully, that this is your time to have a say. I think the 21 days is business days, so we're talking 5 weeks here. Four or 5 weeks. It's plenty of time. If people want to know, you know, that's what you do. Certainly, you have your input, sort of thing. I've heard this over the years where we've got to knock on every door, sort of thing, to tell people. And if you're not interested, you're not interested. But certainly, there's I've had a couple of phone calls regarding certain parts of this, but I look forward to those that consultation. Thank you.
And can I just say, it's fair to say that any submissions made prior to the 23rd of May will be accepted. Getting that nod as well. Thank you. Gives you a little bit more time. Councillors, if there's no further discussion, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion's carried. Those in favour? Councillor Boglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Bishop, Councillor Williams. Those against? Councillor Tolte and Councillor Gleeson. Thank you. Next item is 11.1.4, Local Law Number 8. It's also for community consultation, waste management. Councillor Boglari would like to move that, and Councillor Hughes second that. Could you like speak to it, Councillor Boglari?
Yeah, I'd just like to move the officer's recommendation as in the report. And as the report says, provisions of the state government legislation are expiring on the 1st of June 2018. So council now needs to adopt a local law, as we now become the head of power for waste management in the local government from that date. And before any local law can be adopted, it has to go out to community consultation. So this is just to make sure that we're all in accordance with everything that needs to be by that date and with community consultation.
Speaker against? No speakers. Any other comments? There being none, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Item 11.2.1 is just decisions made under delegated authority for noting. Moved Councillor Edwards, seconded Councillor Hughes. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Edwards?
No, I'll just move the officer recommendation to note the report.
Any comments or questions? There being none, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. 11.2.2 is our planning related appeals. Just for noting, moved Councillor Boglari, seconded Councillor Bishop. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Boglari?
No.
Rushing through this. Sorry. Question, Councillor Elliott?
No.
Those in favour? Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. Councillors, we've already addressed item listed 3.2.3 on the agenda, so we'll go straight to the mayoral minute that I've distributed to you, and hopefully I can find it. That's my paper. Thank you. Councillors, as you would be aware, last night I was up very late drilling through some budget papers, trying to understand why the federal government had blindsided us in the ongoing negotiations. Today I'm asking basically your further endorsement. This was a unanimous decision of council in 2015, if I recall, to go back and continue those negotiations with the outcome that this should be land for community use, and that we are not accepting that land to be sold for 400 houses, nor are we accepting that under the guise of reducing pressure on housing affordability when we have met our requirements under the state regional plan for the future growth to 2041, nor will we accept the fact that there is no infrastructure there. It's outside of the urban footprint at this point in time, and will council be exposed to having to provide infrastructure or extra services to an extra 400 people or 400 houses, which is probably more like 600 people. So this really gives you that background and I guess me further support to write to the relevant ministers and continue to lobby for the outcome that I believe our community has been on this journey with us for 3.5 years. So that's the motion before you, Council. As I put it, it really just gives you... okay. So just to be clear, that we've got the RP right in the formal resolution, because there are two sites there as well. Just remember, these are two different sites. One's Air Services and one's ACMA. And this issue has come through from ACMA. And I met with relevant senior bureaucrats of that department only a month ago. Was not given any indication that they would not, as had been previously informally agreed, that we would be able to have these negotiations outside of the open market process, and that the legislation actually allows them to divest of their surplus land directly to another level of government. And last night what they did is created a whole heap of other challenges for us and our ratepayers to acquire that land by suggesting it should be housing. I'm certainly standing firm, and I'm hoping that yourselves and the state government will stand firm side by side on this issue. I'm happy to open. I know it's been a topical discussion over years, but I just guess ask for your endorsement. Happy to take any comments, Councillor Hughes.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you for preparing this mayoral minute for us this morning. Understanding the time constraints. With point one, enter urgent negotiations with a view to acquiring the land, we all here in this chamber I feel that that would be wonderful if we could do that on behalf of our community. I just question and wonder now, with the fact that we were into negotiations with that land, and obviously the dollars may have been... more favourable to us as a direct negotiation and going to the open market, would that be a constraint to us in these negotiations? How would we proceed with that? Thank you, Mayor.
Well, I guess strong, firm, loud voices supported by our community more so than anything. This land isn't developable. It's not acknowledged to be a land needed for housing. For them to even suggest 400 houses is actually bewildering to me. They have constraints, including no infrastructure, and they will be the very arguments that I will have. And I will also be stating on your behalf and on the community's behalf that, you know, what they have done is raised the expectations and the potential of someone to land bank this for future governments to make a different decision on. And that is simply not acceptable to our community. We do everything we have to do to accommodate the growth of our region. We do it with often targets painted on our back to do it, and I've certainly not taken this one in the back when our community needs that strategic piece of land for community purposes, whatever that might be. We were hoping to get an agreement to go have this land acquired by Redland City Council so that we could go out to community consultation and see exactly what they wanted. And we were heading down that road, but negotiations went cold, and then they changed some personnel, and next thing you know, we were back to square one. And so I wrote a letter, I think on the 6th of April, to one of their senior bureaucrats, who I won't name here in case I get it wrong, stating our continued desire to acquire this land for community purposes at community purposes prices. That's the big stickler for me, because we don't want to pay developer prices for this land. Councillor Elliott.
Well, you know, this is an appalling act. I'm always said that we wouldn't get a university site, but I think to get duck shoved this way, you know, Andrew Lemming's carried on for 12 years about this will be a university, blah, blah, blah. Well, obviously he didn't even know, his own government doesn't even tell him what's going on. So I hope, more than this, I hope we launch a campaign like we did about the state, about Stradbroke. You know, this is given a good kick in time. You know, this is not delivering anything. You know, if this is the only thing Andrew Lemming can deliver is 400 houses, we don't need any more bloody houses. You know, this is ridiculous. This is ridiculous. I'm appalled at this decision. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Councillor Bishop.
This is an appalling and predictable situation. We know the history of this land We know that this land was developed in 1863 by pioneers who forged the roads, created and developed the whole infrastructure of that part of this city. We know that we now own a house on the site that used to own this entire block of land. We know that that owner, who had inherited it, and by the time General MacArthur came to town in 1945, well, before that, after, 4 days after the Hiroshima bomb was dropped, the surrender message came to that block of land. This has incredible significance to our city, to the people of our city. And I have been asking for many years, previously as divisional councillor, that's changed. I'm no longer the divisional councillor. And yet our community's needs and desires and future expectations for that land has not been a voice that's been heard. Every single councillor in this room knows that I've been asking for heritage assessment of that land. Has there been any quarter of any support whatsoever? Not at all. We've been asking for environmental and conservation significance to be addressed. These are not addressed in this particular item.
That's, I am
addressing the fact that this is an alarmingly predictable situation. And we as councillors and you, Madam Mayor, need to ensure that the community's voice, which is the sole voice which has not been heard, at no stage I've been asking, can we get these assessments done on heritage assessment, on conservation, the significance of this land? It's the last portion of land that's available. It's got cultural heritage significance potentially. It's got military estate significance, heritage significance, absolutely. That hasn't been assessed. We need to have these things assessed in this, and we need to have a meeting with our public, our community, because part of the Commonwealth Land Disposal Act is that we are clear with our community about what the expectation is for the future use of this land. We've put it into the future, into the urban footprint in this last couple of terms of council. The state's kept it out. We've asked for that to be put in. We've asked for that, but we've done none of the assessments. We must do that, and I implore you, for this to go ahead, we must have absolute clarity that heritage assessment is done on this site, that that conservation and environmental significance, cultural heritage significance, are all part of this, because they're things that have been prevented. I've been asking for that, and we've been saying, no, we're not going to do that until we own it. I'm going to submit a letter here that I wrote, and I cc'd it to you, Madam Mayor. I cc'd it to Don Brown, the state member for the area. I cc'd it to Andrew Lamming. I got a response back from him, and I cc'd it. I addressed it in registered mail in January of this year, and I cc'd it a few days later to the Finance Minister, Mr. Cormann, saying there are four critical issues that need to be addressed, and they are good governance. The consultation with relation to our purchase of this site has been done by Redlands Investment Corporation. We haven't had line of sight as to what that negotiation is as councillors.
Mayor, is this not confusing the intent of the mayoral minute?
I'm actually asking for your support to continue.
I'd also like to point out, I don't think there's one person in the room that thought this was a predictable outcome.
Okay.
There is one person, at least.
I think this has become a bit of a shock to pretty much everyone in the room.
This has been a predictable thing that certain people in this room have actually participated in.
I think we should stick divisional boundary please, changing.
Councillor, please.
I can assure you that. This is not a shock.
Councillor Bishop, just reminding you of the standing orders.
I've just had
a point of order called. I'm asking you to talk to the mayoral minute. Thank you.
So the mayoral minute. The four issues that relate, that I believe are significant, is that councillors have not had line of sight as to the negotiations.
Councillor, that's your second warning. We're talking to the mayoral minute.
Okay. Cultural heritage needs to be addressed in your mayoral minute, if you could do that, please. We need to address the ecological, environmental significance and the landscape considerations, the significance of the history of that site over the last 150 years, because primary production continued as a use right up until 2014 with the goat lady living on that site, and that is of significance too. She livestocked right on... That has been a continued use since pioneering European pioneering heritage has gone right up until 2014, and also issues of Indigenous cultural heritage and South Sea Islander culture. I table this letter for your consideration, Madam.
Thank you, Councillor.
And you know I've CC'd you into this previously, and I'd like to invite every councillor to a meeting on the 20th of May at 2 o'clock at the Maroondoo Sport and Recreation Hall so that
thank
we
you,
can
Councillor.
Discuss this. Thank you.
Councillor Edwards.
Thank you, Mayor. I appreciate you bringing this minute. I also acknowledge the councillor's passion. However, this is really about, I believe, things we talk about dealing with other levels of government is having transparency, trust, working together for the benefit of the community. They're the things I think we all aspire to and try to do. And this is one example where we have been for a number of years trying to work to get an outcome that is going to benefit everyone. And even with your recent visits to Canberra, you've been deceived. I would find it very hard to believe that that there wasn't discussions around this some time ago. And so I can't help feel that as a council we've and the community have kind of been backstabbed with this proposal to turn something into 400 houses, which to me, part of a budget, it looks like this is the way to maximise a return to help their budget. It's got nothing to do with community benefit or community need and what we've been working for. We've been sold out. Simply as that, sold out. So I would urge our federal member to do everything possible to support council in taking action against this proposal. And I would champion our federal member to be a leader in that regard.
Thank you. I agree with everything that has been said today, especially including what Councillor Bishop's words are. Recently in the planning scheme, we actually changed the Birkdale land to go into its own category out of economic and industrial in the draft to make sure it was more safe and secured for more community purpose. The community has been so interested in this. I wouldn't like to be Andrew Lemming today, because I'm sure once the community gets hold of this, they'll want to know where he's standing and what he's going to do. I thank the Mayor for being very quick in getting this mayoral minute up and ready for this morning's meeting. And I also agree with Councillor Elliott. We had a sign saying Save Stratty. I'm happy to get another bit of core flute with something about the Birkdale land written on it. This is too important a piece of land for a number of reasons. It's got all the heritage. It's got cultural values. It's along a creek bed. It's one of our last open spaces. And with the amount of infill that we're getting in Redlands, if we have land like this available to us, we have to make sure we use it for the correct purpose. And the Mayor said we don't need any more land for housing. We're meeting those targets which the state have set. So this is totally inappropriate. And I agree with Councillor Edwards' comments. My back is bleeding. This is absolutely being backstabbed. And for the federal government to do this, with the amount of discussions that have been going on, I haven't been involved in them, but I know discussions have been going on, for it to be turning around and totally disregarding anything that Redlands City Council has said and anything the Redlands City community has said, is, I think the word appalling has been used, disgusting. There's a number of adjectives that can be used. And it's so disappointed. But at the 11th hour, or maybe at 11:59, we have come together this morning and we're all in agreement by the sounds of it on the way forward. And so that's a good point of agreement today to commence the forward campaign. But I would just like the Mayor, I'm pretty sure you mentioned this morning verbally or somewhere I read, you've also got a e-petition or something going?
Change.org petition so the community can further support the 11 people in this room.
I just wanted that mentioned, if you could speak more to that later.
Sure.
So that the paper and community members here know this is time for Redlands to stand and let the federal government know what we think about this decision.
Councillor Golay.
Yeah, thanks, Madam Mayor. I'll take a slightly different approach. First of all, I will 100% support you on this, and I think we're all quite in shock. The shock and awe hit us this morning when we heard this news. But I don't particularly want to throw stones at any one particular party or political reasoning here or value. You've got both state and federal governments, in my view, have let us down as a council. They have pushed this whole affordable living concept, which has greatly impacted the Redlands and pushed a lot of housing development our way without any actual infrastructure investment. Overall, we need to stand united on this, and we need to run a campaign similar to what Councillor Edwards said, which is the Strati campaign. We don't need another 400 houses down there because the infrastructure is not there to support it anyway. So well done. Let's push forward with the fight and stand united on this. Thank you.
Councillor Tolte, did you have your hand up, Councillor Glazer?
Thank you.
Councillor Tolte, that's all right, I'll come to you. Go. No, Councillor Tolte.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. More than happy to support you on this and have supported it all the way through. I just want to ask a question. I'm happy if ultimately this ends up being a historical and botanical garden in the end. I'm not fixed on what exactly goes there. But with dot point two in the motion, were we to end up eventually succeeding with getting an education facility, would that preclude us from developing student accommodation or units for students or something like that on part of the site? I just want to clarify that if I can.
Well, I think it's just too premature for us to make those kind of assumptions. So that definitely if we acquire the land, we'd ask the community for their input on that. Currently, we would have to overcome the requirements of what the planning tools are, so regional plans. So I think it's just a bit early for that. It's been touted for a long time before my time as a potential university site. Doesn't mean that's what it's going to be, but it's clearly a strategically placed piece of land that would serve the community in creating jobs or benefiting community rather than just selling it off to fill the deficit black hole.
Thank you. Thank you,
Councillor Gleeson.
Thanks, Mayor. I'm just as ticked off as everybody else in this room today. This was an absolute shock. No one in here saw this coming, I don't think, really. Even to the point where the federal member, only in the last year or two, has been talking also about potential university placement down there on that site. And to a degree, I doubt that he even knew this was coming up. I'd be interested to know whether he even knew that this was part of the budget. I really want to see Council do a really big campaign, as Councillor Elliott said. We can get some big voices out there. Your petition at the moment, sitting at 281, people have signed it this morning. But we need, like you said, with the Save Strati campaign, we've got to do something really big about this. That block of land is so important to the northern part of the city. We don't have these big blocks up here anymore, like we've got scattered down in the southern part. And look, as the divisional councillor, Councillor Bishop and I might have different ideas of what its potential use is down the track, but the block of land is so big that the opportunities are almost endless. You know, we can lock up the radio room for a bit of historical use. We've got spaces there for some sporting grounds that are just exploding in Capella Bar around the corner. Some botanical gardens, some access to the river down the bottom. There's so many potential things that we could be doing in that block of land. We cannot sit back and allow 400 houses just to be put on there and sold off from the state government for that. The federal government. Adjoining the Willard Farm property, I never supported buying that property, but the fact is we've done it now. We've spent the money. We've got a lot more to go on it yet, and it only sits on about 2 acres of land. I mean, we could open that up to a bit of a precinct down there. There's opportunities for the Willard Farm site there as well to improve it based on this. This is really important. I can see a backflip coming up, but I think we need to get together, council and the community,
and be a united front like we obviously are here this morning, and really get that message out there that this won't be accepted.
Councillor, any other speakers? Councillor Bishop, I've given you quite some time. A quick comment?
Councillor Gleeson a moment ago mentioned our differing views. Federal government's got differing views. Part of the Disposal Act is to be clear about what is the community's view. We need consistency from our community. There's been so many studies done on that site. We have not progressed anywhere but in the political arena. The community's voice has not been heard. Can I please implore you to involve a community phase of some sort of consultation? Also heritage assessment, robust EPBC heritage and environmental assessments as part of your mayoral minute, please.
Councillors, I think there's been a misunderstanding of the process here. There is, under that Disposal Act, the requirement, should anyone want to have a different use there, to go through community consultation. When we started this journey, we investigated the legislation. It allowed us to acquire that land as a level of government without having to go through that phase.
By identifying it didn't, in line with our divestment process.
No, it didn't actually. It didn't. The legislation allowed them to have that transaction with another level of government. Rather than going through community consultation before we had that in our hands, we decided that we'd do that community consultation once we'd acquired that land at fair value from the federal government. The most important thing for us to do now is to make sure we acquire that land at a reasonable price for what it's intended to do. We've never asked the government to give it to us, although we would accept it very gratefully, of course. We always were at the table to negotiate whatever their requirement was. But today, last night, we were completely blindsided. Those sorts of reports are absolutely going to be critical. I agree with you, Councillor Bishop. The only disagreement we've had in the past is at what time they happen, and where we invest our time. So to be really clear, we invited senior bureaucrats from Air Services Australia and ACMA to my mayoral meeting room to have this discussion as to what process we would follow. We have followed that process to the letter and more. In fact, when I've been to Canberra, I've had those discussions directly with those people. So today, we just need to continue on that journey to make sure we get this land not at developer prices, but at community prices. And frankly, when the Treasurer has been talking about a stronger economy for a country and reducing taxes to do that, it doesn't mean you have to sell off everything to accommodate a better fiscal outcome, because this property allows us to generate a stronger local economy, and local economies added together actually create a much greater sum of a national economy. And the educational facilities, whatever it might be, whether it's a heritage site, whether it's about communications, will have an attraction and an opportunity for us to generate a local economy. So with that, you have my commitment, Councillor Bishop, that those things will happen should we acquire the land. But at this point in time...
This is the same point we ought to be at. If we don't put heritage assessment... We need to have confirmation for the federal government that it's in line and that it's supported by our robust studies. We haven't done them. They need to be in this.
They unequivocally said that was not required because we were going through another process. Correct. It happened, but not because we weren't following the process. And so I think, Councillor Bishop, I've given you quite a lot of time, and I appreciate your passion for this subject, but I am now asking us to stand together and let the federal government know, and ACMA know in particular, that we're not going to stand aside and cost ratepayers more or lose this great opportunity. So the petition that Councillor Boglari has mentioned is obviously, I find it on a Facebook page. I'll ask if we can put it, maybe promote it, if with your indulgence, on Council's Facebook page. It's at change.org. I think it's up to about 300 signatures already, and that I think it went up there at about 10 o'clock last night. So there is already great interest. Certainly the state's interested, and regional press is interested. So now is opportunity to get the best possible deal for our community. So with that, I offer you this mayoral minute, and I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried. Those in favour, Councillor Boglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Williams. Those against, Councillor Bishop. With that, councillors, our agenda now leads us to notice of motion, urgent business, which I haven't been advised of any. So with that, I'll close the meeting at 11:54. Thank you.